The tales on this podcast are dark, sometimes scary, and full of adult themes. As a warning, the original story of The Buccaneer features violent murder, suicide, violence, and other disturbing acts. Please exercise caution for children under 13. Despite the creaking ship and rough waters, Señora Cristobal slept peacefully in her cabin. The knowledge that her loyal servants were just a deck away had brought her a great sense of comfort on her long voyage. But as she slept, she thought about him, her husband. He was the reason for her journey from the old world to the new one. And each night, he came back to her, still beautiful, still alive. She could feel the warmth of his embrace. Suddenly, a scream pierced Cristobal's dreams, and the visions of her beloved were gone in an instant. Someone was pounding violently at her cabin door. She barely had time to leave her bed before it swung open. Even in the dim moonlight, she could tell it was her valet, Rodrigo. The large man was standing oddly still, silhouetted in the moonlight. But then she saw his nightshirt was stained in blood. He gasped,
"Señora Cristobal, run!"
Rodrigo collapsed to the ground, revealing a knife in his back. A dark figure then emerged from behind him and plucked the blade from his body. The man turned toward Cristobal, his grin as big as the crescent moon, and said,
"Now come with me, missy. Wouldn't want you getting hurt."
I'm Vanessa Richardson. You're listening to Tales, a Parcast original. Every Wednesday, we dive into the dark origins of another fairy tale. You can find all episodes of Tales and all other Parcast originals for free on Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts. To stream Tales free on Spotify, just open the app and type Tales in the search bar. Today we'll be telling the story of The Buccaneer, an American folktale of piracy, revenge, and their sometimes ghostly consequences. We'll discuss the origins of this tale right after this.
This episode is brought to you by Anytime Fitness. Forget dark alleys and cemeteries. For some, the gym is the scariest place of all, but it doesn't have to be. With a personalized plan and expert coaching, Anytime Fitness can help make the gym less frightening. Get more for your gym membership than machines. Get personalized support anytime, anywhere. Visit AnytimeFitness.com to try it for free today. Terms, conditions, and restrictions apply. See website for details.
The story of The Buccaneer was first published in 1896 by author and folklorist Charles M. Skinner. In an effort to ensure that American folktales and legends were documented for posterity, Skinner adventured across the country to collect dozens of stories. He then published them in his 9-volume series, The Myths and Legends of Our Own Land. Among his many destinations, Skinner journeyed to Block Island off the southern coast of Rhode Island, an area known for its lawless past. The island was visited by many pirates in the 17th and 18th centuries, and was even the temporary home of several notorious swashbucklers, such as Captain Bellamy and Thomas Paine. But the story of The Buccaneer isn't just rooted in Block Island's history of piracy, it's also inspired by its many shipwrecks. Because of its rocky shores, Block Island was the site of several historic wrecks, which served as the basis for a tale in Skinner's collection. Originally known as Block Island and the Palatine, the story centers on a doomed vessel that sinks off the island's shores only to reemerge from the depths to haunt its crazed captain. Block Island and the Palatine, or the version we'll tell today, The Buccaneer, is a folktale about cruelty and greed, and how the ghosts of our misdeeds can drive us mad. Lee was eating breakfast when the head nun made the announcement. All boys 15 and older were to assemble in the director's office immediately. It was welcome news for Lee. Every time he took a spoonful of his rancid porridge, he wanted to gag. But he knew if he didn't finish, Sister Catherine would be more than happy to lash him. But what else could you expect at an orphanage? Lee was used to it. He'd been abandoned as a baby on Block Island, and like so many unwanted children, he fell into the open arms of the local orphanage. There, with no surname of his own, they'd simply named him Lee. But the orphanage was a hard place, and Lee quickly learned to adapt. The older he grew, the more rebellious he became. He wasn't afraid to talk back to the nuns or throw a punch at the other children. In short, he was a bad seed, and the orphanage was eager to get rid of him. But Lee was just as eager to leave. His heart pounded as he walked down the hall. Going to the director's office only meant one thing. Someone was looking to adopt. In the office, he lined up shoulder to shoulder with the other boys his age. Lee was a head taller than the rest, lean, with sinewy muscle. He looked more like a man than a boy. For that reason, he knew it was unlikely he'd be chosen. Parents wanted to adopt children, not men. But when the potential adopter walked in, Lee was taken by surprise. He was an old man, a sailor, with a long, wispy beard and a leather jacket aged by the sea air. And attached to his knee was a wooden peg where his right leg should have been. His name was Cornelius Perlman.
"I've come to find a lad to help me with my business, an apprentice, if you will."
The room fell silent. This man wasn't looking to adopt a son. He was looking for free labor. Suddenly, Lee was hopeful. He had a chance. Cornelius strolled up and down the row of boys, his peg leg thumping on the wooden floor with every step. As he passed, he examined them like livestock. He needed a strong lad, not these scrawny, malnourished boys. Cornelius scoffed. Then he approached Lee. He stopped, looking the teenager up and down.
"What be your name, lad?"
Cornelius asked him gruffly. Lee's voice was quiet but steady. He looked the sailor in the eye.
"Lee, mister. Just Lee. Whatever you need, I can do it."
Cornelius chuckled at his curt reply.
"I like you, son. You'll work just fine."
The sailor adopted Lee that same day, but if he thought he was finally free, Lee was sorely mistaken. Cornelius took him back to his small cabin by the sea and immediately put him to work. Though Cornelius's sailing days were long behind him, he took up a new trade as a wrecker. Wreckers were scavengers who monitored the beaches hoping to loot from any ship unfortunate enough to crash nearby. At his cabin on Block Island, Cornelius would wait day in, day out, until he heard the terrible sound of a ship smashing into the rocks. Then he would send Lee to find the wrecked vessel and plunder whatever goods could be sold at port. Lee would squeeze through the crushed nooks and crannies of the ship, ensure the crew was either all dead or unconscious, and then grab everything he could carry. He took gold, spices, and furs, anything of value he could stuff into canvas sacks and haul back to shore. But the work didn't end there. Back at Cornelius's cabin, Lee was tasked with a list of grueling chores. He scrubbed the barnacle-covered floors and washed clothes in water so hot it made his skin raw. If Lee refused, Cornelius was quick to strike him and bellow,
"Rapscallion! I was forged in the icy hell of the sea. I'll tame you as I tamed my ship and crew."
Then, standing over the beaten lad, Cornelius would always threaten to bring out his old cat-o'-nine-tails to truly teach him a lesson. But just when Lee made plans to run away, he saw a different side of Cornelius. The old sailor began to mentor him. He taught Lee how to live by and on the sea, how to cook, how to sail, and cartography, but above all, Lee cherished the times when Cornelius would play his accordion and sing him shanties. Lee was fascinated by his stories of sea monsters and mermaids. However, as the years went by, Cornelius still kept Lee at a distance. Even as Lee reached adulthood, Cornelius refused to give him his surname.
"You're just me lackey boy. You're just a bastard and will always be,"
he would mock. And though he didn't show it, Lee never forgot those words. As he approached his 20s, Lee became determined to strike out on his own. Hoping to save up enough to buy his own ship, he began sneaking portions of the loot for himself and stashing away his own growing fortune. So when a Dutch merchant ship crashed near the cabin, Lee was already on the beach, eager to add to his already growing hoard. As he crawled through the splintered hull, Lee couldn't believe his eyes. Gold and silver coins glittered across the planks in great heaps. This one haul would be enough to secure his freedom. But then he heard something, weak and rasping breathing. In the corner of the wreckage, one of the Dutch merchants was still alive, pinned under debris. Lee had a witness. The man pleaded to him,
"Please help me, kind boy. I'll give you anything you want."
Lee looked from the merchant to the goods scattered around them. His mouth began to curl into a grin. "Do I need your permission?" Lee then seized the man's throat, squeezing with all his might. The merchant flailed and gagged, but Lee didn't let go until the life left his body. Then all was still. How strange, Lee thought, while looking at the merchant's purplish face. It was his first murder, yet he felt almost nothing. But as he gathered up the coins and goods, Lee did feel something. Satisfaction. When Lee returned to the cabin, Cornelius was ecstatic. The haul he pulled from the merchant ship was the largest they'd had all year. But as they divided the loot, Lee demanded a larger cut of the profits. The old man scoffed.
"Hardships build character, lad. Under my tutelage, you'll become a fine one indeed."
Lee could feel the rage building in his chest. "How am I supposed to secure my own ship in poverty?" Cornelius simply laughed in the younger man's face.
"That seems like a problem you'll have to figure out yourself now, doesn't it?"
Lee's blood boiled and his fists clenched, but soon a sense of clarity came over him. He smiled at Cornelius. The lad knew what needed to be done. Later that night, Lee dragged the dead body of Cornelius Perlman through the sand. He then took a dinghy out to sea in order to give him a proper burial. The old man's eyes bulged out of their sockets, and his neck was swollen and bruised. On his dead, pale face was an undeniable expression of shock. Shock that he'd met his end at the hands of the very boy he'd taken into his home. Lee tied Cornelius's body to a rock and tossed the old man overboard. He stared into his vacant eyes as the corpse slowly sank into the dark abyss. Then, just like that, Cornelius Perlman was gone. And with all of the old man's riches for himself, it was time for Lee to buy that ship. Coming up, Lee captains his own crew and begins a career destined for infamy.
This episode is brought to you by Anytime Fitness. Forget dark alleys and cemeteries. For some, the gym is the scariest place of all, but it doesn't have to be. With a personalized plan and expert coaching, Anytime Fitness can help make the gym less frightening. Get more for your gym membership than machines. Get personalized support anytime, anywhere. Visit AnytimeFitness.com to try it for free today. Terms, conditions, and restrictions apply. See website for details.
Now, back to the story. After Cornelius Pearlman adopted him, Lee lived and worked under the old sailor, helping him plunder ships that crashed upon Block Island's shores. But years of abuse and labor hardened Lee, and soon he decided to kill Cornelius. Shortly after Cornelius Pearlman disappeared, Lee took everything he could from the old man's cabin and sold it off at the harbor. And soon, with all the pilfered goods he'd accumulated from wrecking, Lee finally had enough money to achieve his dream of captaining his own boat. He bought a ship named Plutonia and quickly assembled a crew from the local riffraff on Block Island. Lee even managed to convince an experienced longshoreman named Mark Buford to join as his first mate. At first, Buford had been hesitant to work under a first-time captain, but Lee had made him a promise. Teach him the ways of the sea, and Buford's wealth would grow tenfold. Lee then handed him a year's salary to seal the deal. Captain Lee began his career transporting goods from the New World to the Old and back again. It was honest work, but tedious, and the profits were modest. But Lee craved money and power. So, not long after he sailed Plutonia under a friendly banner, he unfurled the Jolly Roger. Lee sailed the Atlantic, plundering any ship unfortunate enough to cross his path, and his crew of rogues was all too happy to resort to violence if it led to a larger profit, even if that meant murder. For that reason, Lee and his crew quickly became notorious across the seven seas, and several nations offered bounties for their capture. One day at port, when Buford showed his captain a wanted poster with his likeness, Lee was delighted, but his first mate wasn't nearly as amused.
Lee, there's a price on our heads. If we want to avoid execution, we must take proper action.
Lee scoffed. They were pirates. Death warrants were to be expected, but Buford had a proposal.
We may be pirates, but if we plunder under the flag of the right country, we won't have to worry about bounties and death warrants. We could be buccaneers.
Buford explained that many infamous pirates had signed on as buccaneers for whichever nation paid the most, and the best part was that it was legal. Lee smiled at the thought. More plundering and murder, but all under the protection of a monarchy. It seemed too good to be true. He turned to his crew.
If we are to find a royal sponsor, then let us show what kind of men we can be.
After that day, the Plutonia struck several British merchant ships in an effort to get the attention of one of England's enemies, the Spanish. Soon enough, the tactic worked. Spain sent an envoy to meet the pirates and offer their sponsorship, and a deal was struck. Lee and his crew would attack and pilfer Spain's enemy vessels and split the booty with the monarchy. In return, Lee would have the Spanish government's protection against enemy nations and immunity from imprisonment. And Lee made the most of their agreement. Though Lee had a fearsome reputation before flying the Spanish flag, his career as a buccaneer was even more violent. And wherever it sailed, the Plutonia left carnage and destruction in her wake. But over time, Lee grew wary with his contract. Despite the blood and the gold, his life of government-sanctioned crime was beginning to become rather dull. During one hot and hazy summer, as Lee and his crew were docked at the Spanish port of Barcelona, Lee was especially restless. Alcohol, wenches, violence, nothing seemed to satisfy him anymore. But one night as he stumbled aimlessly from the tavern, full of rum and blind anger, he found himself on the docks looking longingly at the water. He thought of his lot in life and where it was all leading. Was he doomed to forever be a sea dog for the monarchy? Lee went to take a swig of rum and cursed. It was empty. But before he could throw the bottle into the waves, he heard something. Crying. A woman in distress. In his boredom, he decided to investigate. Walking down the planks of the harbor, he found an elegantly dressed lady in red, definitely a woman of nobility. She stood overlooking the ocean, her long, dark hair cascading over her face as she wept into her hands. Captain Lee stepped closer.
"What troubles you this night, m'lady?"
he asked in a soothing tone. The woman wiped away her tears and turned toward the sailor. Captain Lee was taken aback. She was beautiful. Even in her sorrow, her glassy green eyes were striking.
"I am sorry if I bothered you, sir. I was just notified of some terrible news. My beloved husband has passed an ocean away."
She burst into tears again. Captain Lee offered a handkerchief to the woman.
"Please go on,"
he said gently, hiding his curiosity. The woman introduced herself as Señora Cristabel Larraz. She explained that her husband, Raúl, had gone to the Americas to claim some farmland, only to fall ill shortly after arriving. Señora Cristabel was desperate to charter a ship to recover her husband's body, but had little luck finding one. Captain Lee smiled wide, a plot forming in his deranged mind. If he were to transport this grieving, rich widow, he could seduce her, marry her, and gain nobility and her wealth. It was all coming together. A deal was struck. Lee offered to sail back to the American colonies with Señora Cristabel for only a modest sum. When she insisted on paying him more, Lee played the part of a generous gentleman. He declined her offer, telling her,
"Returning a smile to your beautiful face will be reward enough."
The Señora thanked him profusely, and Lee was more than happy to have her in his debt. The Señora would travel with her prized horse, Luna. The beast was beautiful, with a coat as alabaster as the full moon. Señora Cristabel insisted she would need a steed in the New World, but because the horse was a gift from her beloved Raúl, she couldn't bear to leave him behind. The Señora also brought several servants with her, including her trusted valet, Rodrigo. He was a tall and imposing man, with dark eyes that seemed to pierce right through the captain's very soul. He knew Lee was up to something. But Lee couldn't have cared less. All was going according to plan. Within a week of Captain Lee and Señora Cristabel's arrangement, the Plutonia set sail from Spain to begin the long voyage. In the beginning, Captain Lee was nothing but courteous to the Señora. He made every effort to ensure her comfort on the journey. And as evening fell, he often stayed by her side, listening to her tales of love and loss. But soon enough, his motives proved to be impure. That night, Lee offered to show Cristabel the stars from the main deck. But as they gazed at the heavens, Lee's calloused hands had more earthly ideas. The Señora shrieked, slapping Lee across the face.
"How dare you, Captain Lee? How dare you lay your hands on a grieving widow?"
she bellowed. Her servants rushed to the scene and nearly took up arms then and there, but Buford stepped in just in time.
"Our apologies, m'lady. The captain meant no harm. We promise no further rudeness for the rest of the voyage. Isn't that right, Captain Lee?"
Rubbing the cheek where the Señora had slapped him, Lee begrudgingly agreed. But he had other plans in mind. One quiet night, while Cristabel and her servants were fast asleep, Lee assembled his crew and armed them with knives and muskets. If he couldn't seduce his way into the Señora's wealth, he'd simply take it by force. Moving quietly across the ship, the pirates carefully slaughtered each and every servant from Señora Cristabel's party. But when they made it to Cristabel's valet, Rodrigo, he was already on his feet, blade drawn. As they charged, the large man attempted to block the pirates' every blow.
"Scoundrels! Your treachery shall not go unpunished,"
But one man against 10 proved too much for Rodrigo, and as they clashed swords, Lee managed to sink his dagger into the manservant's back. Rodrigo cried out in anguish and stumbled toward Cristobal's cabin.
Señora Cristobal! Señora! Run!
He yelled into the dark, hoping to alert his lady. As Rodrigo collapsed in front of his shocked mistress, Lee stood over his body. Lee looked at Cristobal with a crazed grin. Now he intended to collect his final prize.
Now come with me, Missy. Wouldn't want you getting hurt.
The Senora jumped out of bed in a panic. She was unarmed and surrounded by killers. She was sure the captain intended to keep her as ransom, or worse. Cristobal threw anything she could at the pirate and ran past him as he shielded himself. When Captain Lee turned back to the main deck, he saw the noblewoman perched atop the railing of the ship, nothing between her and the open ocean. She snarled at Lee.
You may take what is mine, but you will never have me.
Then she plunged into the dark water below. Lee ran to the side of the ship, but all he saw was the roiling sea. It was too late. He gripped the rail so hard, the wood splintered in his hands. How dare she deny him the prize of her capture? Lee stared into the watery abyss, consumed by fury. Then he heard a noise. He turned. It was Cristobal's prized horse. The beast was thrashing in its pen, neighing in a fury as though he knew his mistress was gone forever. The pirate cackled.
So sorry, poor beast. Allow me to reunite you both.
And with that, Captain Lee freed Luna from his tether and forced the horse overboard. Luna thrashed wildly in the water, whinnying as he struggled to keep his head above the waves. Lee laughed as the beautiful steed sank into the depths of the sea. But it would not be the last time Captain Lee saw the horse. Coming up, Captain Lee buries his treasure and unearths skeletons from his past. Now, back to the story. Captain Lee and the pirates of the Plutonia had successfully slaughtered Senora Cristobal Larraz and her servants. The mad captain even forced the noblewoman's prized horse overboard for good measure. And now a plethora of gold, jewels, and other treasure was theirs for the taking. The crew's jubilant and drunken cheers stirred First Mate Buford from his slumber. And after finding the gory scene of slaughtered servants, he confronted his captain.
My God, Lee, what have you done? Killing a noblewoman will destroy our contract with the Spanish. Are you mad?
Captain Lee laughed.
Oh, Buford, you Puritan. Who cares? With the fortune we've taken from this woman, we will be royalty of the high seas.
Buford shouted in frustration. If the Spaniards found out they murdered and robbed a member of the aristocracy, their entire crew would be executed on sight. But Captain Lee simply smiled at his first mate. He had it all figured out. That day, Lee's crew threw the bodies of Senora Cristobal's servants overboard and changed course for Block Island. They arrived within a fortnight. The Plutonia anchored off the island's rocky shore, and Lee and his crew ventured from the ship to his former master's now derelict cabin. The wood was rotten, and the roof now served as a roost for gulls and ravens, but it was undeniable. It was Cornelius Perlman's cabin. As a lad, Lee dreamed of returning a successful captain, but now that he was there, something about the place unsettled him. Lee pushed the feeling from his mind. He had work to do. First, they would bury the treasure behind the cabin and destroy the Plutonia. Then they would stay on Block Island until they could be sure the Spaniards stopped looking for them. When the time was right, they would leave with their stolen goods. All they had to do was wait. That night, several men were already striking the ground, digging by torchlight. Buford pleaded with his captain to reconsider.
We can say the Plutonia was wrecked and Cristobal and her servants died in the process. If the Spanish discover what we've done, we'll be tortured to death.
This drew paranoid murmurs from the crew, but Lee was unmoved. He stared stoically at his first mate as he rambled. Then Lee finally spoke.
There's no need to frighten yourself, dear Buford. You won't have to worry about anything ever again.
Then the captain drew his pistol. Lee shot Buford right through the heart. He was dead before he even hit the sand. As blood pooled around Buford's body, Lee turned to his horrified crew and bellowed.
Now let this be a lesson to the lot of you. Listen to Captain Lee or join the rest.
The pirates immediately started digging. By sunset, the Senora's goods and jewels were buried deep beneath the sand, and Lee personally hauled Buford onto the empty Plutonia. As a final touch, he tied his corpse to the wheel. The captain turned to the assembled crew and yelled,
A captain always goes down with his ship, but a first mate will substitute just as well.
Then Lee lit the boat ablaze and let the fiery ship drift out to sea. The men watched, clutching hats to their chest as their ship sank into the depths, along with their former first mate. But Lee stood stoic. Crew, ship, family, they were all meaningless sentimentalities to the infamous Captain Lee. A year seemed to pass quickly as day after day, Lee and his lot reveled in their murderous victory. With the portion of riches they distributed amongst themselves, the crew led easy lives. And soon enough, with the rest of Senora Cristobal's gold, they would live grand ones. But until the day came when they could unearth their treasure, Captain Lee stayed at Cornelius Perlman's old cabin to ensure none of his men tried to abscond with their loot. He ate well, repeatedly visited the local brothel, and drank until he forgot his past. But as time dragged on, Lee's life of hedonism grew dull. He began to hate staying in that cursed cabin with its bitter memories of Cornelius. Yet, he stayed. And soon it began to fray at his mind. He grew prone to drunkenness and violent outbursts. Those passing by could hear the captain bellowing in the night, screaming at a mirage of enemies. Even his own crew became wary of approaching him, lest they provoke his rage. Eventually, word spread that the Spanish Empire considered Senora Cristobal and the entire crew of the Plutonia to be lost at sea. Lee and his crew could finally collect their buried riches. That night, they assembled to unearth the treasure exactly 1 year to the day that they had committed their massacre.
Faster, faster, you dogs!
Lee barked as his crew shoveled deep into the sand behind the cabin. The sooner they dug up their riches, the better.
I got it! I got it!
One of the pirates proudly proclaimed as his shovel struck wood. Captain Lee nearly drooled in greed. But as soon as the crew stopped digging, their attention was drawn to a sound coming from beyond the waves. Sails. But what ship would dare approach Block Island's treacherous shores at night? Lee drew his pistol and stepped closer to the water, while his crew watched on. He could hear sails, but saw nothing by the torchlight. Lee's disturbed crew stood on the sand while he stepped toward the waves and peered into the darkness. A roar of flame and wind blew into his face, and then he could see it, a ship. It sailed quickly in their direction, consumed by fire. Its wood was warped and splintered, its decks waterlogged, sails shredded and flapping in the wind. The Plutonia. Somehow, his vessel had emerged from the briny deep.
By Lucifer's beard!
Lee exclaimed in terror. As he stared into the fire-lit waters, Lee saw something moving, no, swimming. Then it emerged. It was a ghoulish-looking man with pale, clammy skin and dark, hollow eyes. His body was covered in barnacles, and his soaked uniform dripped with seawater. Lee gasped. It was the Dutch merchant, his first kill. Another figure then emerged from the sea. It turned slowly, facing Lee in all its horrific glory. An old man. His long beard was inhabited by crabs. His face blue, eyes bulging. Cornelius Perlman. Lee's face went pale under the torchlight. How could it be? More emerged. British soldiers, merchants, villagers. So many of their victims were now rising from the depths to confront them. Lee only just noticed Buford standing on the deck of their burning ship. He glared down at his traitorous captain as flames licked his already charred corpse. And then he saw it. Luna, the pale horse he'd forced overboard. The steed trotted out of the water, but remained as dry and as flawless as when he was alive. But those eyes were black as the abyss and seemed to stare deep into Lee's rotten soul. Soon another figure emerged beside the horse, a woman, Senora Cristobal. She too looked as alive as she'd been in life. She guided her horse toward him. Captain Lee wanted to move, to scream, but instead he stood, mesmerized by the living nightmare before him. Even as Senora Cristobal and the horse grew closer, he was paralyzed. She handed Luna's reins to him and whispered,
"Luna is all yours now, Captain Lee. It's what you deserve. Forever."
As though in a trance, Lee mounted the horse. The ghostly equine immediately bolted through Lee's horrified crew and galloped across the beach. Faster, faster. Soon Lee felt sick. He felt insane. The horse moved at unnatural speeds, and he had no control. He feared his skin would peel off his skull from the speed, that his ribs would rip through his back and his spine would snap. Lee closed his eyes. When he opened them, they were atop a cliff, high above the beach. Lee wanted to jump off the horse to safety, but he was frozen, completely anchored to the spectral beast. He wondered in that moment if this was how it felt for his victims, the building dread, the terror the moment before their mortality was ripped from their bodies. Then they took a step, and the spirit horse plunged from the towering cliff. Back on the beach where his crew stood, Lee's screams were but a whisper. The pirates watched in horror as their captain fell like a stone from the sky and hit the ocean. Neither Lee nor the horse reemerged. The ghouls began their descent back to their watery grave. Turning their backs on the shivering pirates, they slunk into the deep as the Plutonia slowly submerged into the sea. Senora Cristobal stared at the pirates, the hardened cutthroats cowed into submission by the sight of the spectral woman. She didn't say a word as she turned toward the ocean, and as she sunk beneath the waves, she took the legend of Captain Lee with her. The crew was so terrified, they stayed huddled on the beach until dawn. As soon as the sun rose over the water, they rushed to leave Block Island, desperate to escape its curse. Some succeeded, while others tried to evade their fate by suicide, but no one dared to dig up the treasure behind Cornelius Perlman's cabin, lest they face hellish punishment from beyond the grave. Like so many tales before it, The Buccaneer is a morality story about the consequences of cruelty. However, it can also be interpreted as a critique of the era's privateer practices. Privateers, or buccaneers, were allowed to plunder, kill, and commit all manner of debauchery so long as they had an empire's flag on their mast. But even at its inception in the 17th century, the buccaneer system was criticized for allowing criminals to act with impunity. And the story of the buccaneer very well may have been passed among sailors at Block Island and elsewhere to decry privateering. Given the nature of its moral, paired with its historical context, the tale of the buccaneer teaches readers that crime, no matter how lucrative, doesn't pay. Captain Lee dedicates his entire life to wrecking, pirating, and privateering. And though he becomes a rich man, he repeatedly finds himself restless. He's unhappy as a pirate, a buccaneer, and drives himself mad in the aftermath of his most heinous crime, the massacre of Senora Cristobal and her party. Ultimately, the weight of his sins destroys him, reminding readers that the ghosts we create could very well come back to haunt us. Thanks for listening to Tales. We'll be back on Wednesday with a new episode. You can find more episodes of Tales and all other Parcast originals for free on Spotify. Not only does Spotify already have all of your favorite music, but now Spotify is making it easy for you to enjoy all of your favorite Parcast originals, like Tales, for free from your phone, desktop, or smart speaker. To stream Tales on Spotify, just open the app, tap Browse, and type Tales in the search bar. Join me next week for another dark and surprising fairy tale. Tales was created by Max Cutler and is a Parcast Studios original. Executive producers include Max and Ron Cutler, sound design by Russell Nash, with production assistance by Ron Shapiro, Carly Madden, and Isabella Way. This episode of Tales was written by Jacob Davison, with writing assistance by Greg Castro. I'm Vanessa Richardson.